Greetings and salutations. It's me, Colin Moriarty. It's time for another episode of Sacred Symbols, a PlayStation podcast, or actually Sacred Symbols Plus, a PlayStation podcast supplement. This is episode, let me see here. I want to look and make sure. I believe this will be episode number 138. Welcome. Now, it wasn't supposed to be just me today, but I wanted to get this episode out anyway because we just need to get this out the door. I had promised it a while ago. We had already rescheduled it once. This is the Kena Bridge of Spirits review discussion and spoiler cast. I had invited and was supposed to have Eric Kane from Forbes on this discussion. We had actually rescheduled it once to accommodate something that he had to that popped up, but he's a no-show today. So I hope he's okay and wish him well, but we must move on without him as these spoiler casts are going to start stacking up. And I want to just they're going to be more review discussions, I think, for me than spoiler casts. As you guys know, I kind of get more into the mechanics of games and whatnot than the story when I criticize at least action-oriented games. And I wanted to have a brief discussion about this PS4 and PS5 console exclusive, at least timed console exclusive from Ember Labs, because I think it's a really great game and something that I think people should really look into. And I think it deserves its full respect and attention in a fall that is going to be pretty crushed with a lot of games. Not so much on the exclusive or second party front on PlayStation. If you play on Xbox, of course, you're going to have plenty to be busy with soon with Halo. And of course, Forza is already out. So there's a bunch of Game Pass stuff there. But on the PlayStation side, if you're looking for something that's kind of an exclusive experience on the console in the, I don't know, September, let's say Q3, Q4 post Deathloop section. So really Q4, then I really think Kena is the way to go. And by the way, I've written it down here. See, look, I don't know if that comes through. Let's see if I can get it. Kena. I wrote it down because I had a pronunciation issue with it before. But of course, this is an interesting game that I'm excited to talk about for multiple reasons. Number one is I think it is a bridge back, pardon the pun, into the past as far as its mechanics, as far as its spirit and all the rest. So I think that's going to be a fun thing to examine. I also think it's going to be fun to examine the story. As we said earlier, I don't want to focus so much on it. I don't think it's so important. I don't think the beat-to-beat plot is as important as what the game is trying to say. And I think the themes of the game. And so we're going to get into that as well. And then we can get into a bunch of stuff that we have written in from the audience that I'm really excited to get into. Topics like what Kena is like as a protagonist, difficulty spikes, which a lot of people had written in on, and jumping in mechanics, faults of the game, final boss, etc. All right, so let's get into it. Let's have a good time. Kena, Bridge of Spirits. The game launched on September 21st, so a while ago. Again, this is going out later than I had hoped. And it comes from Ember Labs, or Ember Lab, I should say. It's singular. I think we're a little flippant sometimes, by the way, just an aside, with the way we say, like, studios, games, whatever the end is of, like, a specific studio. So, for instance, Liverpool. We used to call them like Team Liverpool, Studio Liverpool, Liverpool Studio. Not all of those things can be true. So let's get it right from the beginning. Ember Lab. And this was directed and produced by the Greer brothers, Mike and Josh Greer, who have a lot of experience actually in animation, but they have far less experience, really none, in games, which is what makes this game so interesting. And I really feel like this is a wonderful game because of its beautiful filmic quality. Again, it's old school 3D platformer action inspired gameplay, and certainly I think was created by a team that understood that maybe games are becoming a little too long and a little too involved. And I was actually just reading the Wikipedia page on a whim before I started, and I had noted that they had said that they wanted to make a game that can be beaten in a weekend. And that reminds me of something that I always say about our games, that the games we make at Lilimo are games, at least for now, are games that I want people to spend like a weekend with, like an interstitial kind of game that doesn't demand too much, because I think time is such important currency in games that you kind of have to be bold to demand too much. And I think Kena Bridge of Spirits really sticks around and sticks the landing and while I think that there are some deficits to it that we can focus on, and we can do that through the inquiries that we have here from the audience, I really want to say that this should be applauded as, I think, one of PlayStation 5's strongest games this year. And so overall, because PlayStation 5 is really only a year old. But Wet Willy wrote in, of course, I always solicit inquiries from the audience on Patreon, and Wet Willy wrote in, I want to kind of get into these. I think this will allow us to explore some of what I feel is worth to talk about in the world of Kena. And he says, this game is incredible for a first effort from a new studio. There isn't any part of the game that is particularly bad, which is astonishing to me. My biggest complaint is the somewhat antiquated beat the game on the hardest difficulty, which has to be unlocked by first beating the game trophy, which is never a good idea. It's not, can be circumvented, or it could have been if you left the game unpatched, which would really be not possible to get it like that anymore. The game isn't a 10-10 masterpiece, but given its first game from a new studio at a $40 price point, I think Ember Lab has something to be proud of here. I actually really agree, and you hit on something really important. The price point is quite appropriate, because I think some people are going to look at this game and think, well, this is too expensive for what would take 8 or 10 hours. I actually wonder what the consensus is. I'm going to look up in real time. And this is kind of the deficit of doing a show by yourself. I'm always clickety-clacking and looking things up so I can sound really smart when it's my turn again. Kena Bridge of Spirits. I wanted to see how, like, what people's consensus is on how long the game is taking people. So on how long to beat, it says main story, 9.5 hours, main plus extras, 13 hours, completion is 17.5 hours. That sounds about right. And it's worth noting, the game is pretty hard, I think. I played it on normal and I thought it was pretty hard. So I've decided maybe I'll go in the future and go for the master difficulty trophy, but that's like two steps above where I was playing, and I found that to be impossible. So in my mind anyway at the time. So I didn't even go for all the trophies because I knew I wasn't going to get the platinum. Therefore, I just felt like I actually left some trophy collectible trophies and stuff behind. But I like the way you bring Wet Willy this kind of first effort and the appropriate price point, because that's what I was saying before. I'm sorry, is that the price point I think is perfect, because the game is expensive looking. The game runs really well. It's really beautiful. I can't speak to it on PlayStation 4. I'm sure it looks great there too. And I know that these cross-generational games often aim at the lowest common denominator. We do talk about that. That does happen. But there's enormous production value in this game. And I think part of that comes with reading a little bit about the team at Ember Lab. They worked with a Vietnamese animation studio called Sparks on this game as well. And I don't know that they're getting much credit for this, but maybe they should. But it seems like the Greer brothers at the head of Ember Lab have, or at least understood at the time, that they didn't know what they needed to know. They became famous, if you don't know, because they did some Zelda like animation, not official, but some Zelda animation that got them attention in the gaming sphere and entertainment, got them some funding, etc. So they're gamers at heart and gamers in mind, but making games is very different, as I've learned. Now, this is a much more ambitious game than anything I've worked on, but when you go into it, you kind of know what you want to do, but it's often good to find experts and people that can help you. And they did that. They did that not only on a, you know, de facto basis, I guess, as they substituted another studio for their vision to kind of work together in Fusion. But I also think that they were able to pursue a goal with Sony as their steward that gave PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5 a game at a time, a good game, a great game at a time when it was really needed. And so I agree with you that Ember Lab has a lot to be proud of. And I think that the beauty of the game, the charm of the game, and the spirit of the game, again, pardon the pun, goes through Kena, the protagonist. And Napoleon in Rags wrote in and said, what do you think of Kena herself? She seems like a pretty flat, uninspired protagonist. I'd say it's the game's biggest weakness for me. Solid, enjoyable game otherwise. Thanks. See, I don't feel that way about her. I feel quite the opposite, actually, because when I look at her, I see, obviously, she's this cute female protagonist, kind of adult, kind of childlike, kind of starry-eyed, kind of learned. But I think it's in her mostly she's silent, mostly she's observing, mostly she's experiencing. And I think they do a really nice job of not making her annoying, not making the dialogue too deep. I really feel like, and I noticed this actually in the credits, the game's not overwritten. I think if I were writing this game, there would have been a lot more, and I don't know if that would have made it better or worse, but I feel like it probably would have made it worse. And I noticed in the credits that the writer is credited like very deep, as it, which signals to me that it's not, or it wasn't really considered an important facet of the game. Not what made it play, of course, but also not what it made it tick. And that's not necessarily uncommon from the PlayStation 2-esque era, Xbox, GameCube era of action platformers, 3D platformers that I think this game is inspired by. Because as we noted, there's, you know, and of course there's masks in the game. That is an ode to Majora's Mask, which is an ode to their original project that got them attention in the first place. And I think with use of that mask and the mysticism that comes with spirits and death and otherworldly apparitions and the connection between the world of the living and the world of the dead, I feel like they have this spirit guide character in Kena that I think is just the conduit, both literally and figuratively, by which the game functions. She's figuratively the spirit that we experience that others use to cleanse themselves and solve their problems and get to die, basically. But I think literally she is just the actual eyeballs and the observer, the ears on the ground, and doesn't have too much to say. So I actually don't think she's uninspired. I think that through her quietness, through her observation, through her constitution and her ability to withstand the fear, the horror, the scariness of encountering this section of land that's basically cursed and under some sort of spell. Remember, she comes into this situation seeking refuge in this mountain, not knowing what she'll encounter in between, knowing that there's a village and a forest, but not realizing that this place is screwed up. So I don't know if my instinct to have overwritten her would have really been the right one, because in some sense, I think you got to let the game breathe. And I think when you're working with a game like this, there's a razor's edge between 10 and 12 hours, 15 hours, 16, 17, 18. Now you're getting into like pretty long, and you've got to decide what kind of game you are. I always say that about Far Cry. Like, I feel like Far Cry really decided what kind of game it was a long time ago by sticking around a really long time. You can imagine, though, that Far Cry would play or could play a lot more like Crysis or something like that, that is clearly from the same DNA, literally from the same genetics as far as studios are concerned, but went in a different direction, and for better or for worse is kind of like Far Cry if Far Cry didn't go overboard and become this massive open world experience. I think you see kind of ebbs and flows like that, and I think that they made their decision. And so I think part of that decision comes from Kena being, in my opinion, quite effective as a protagonist, and I find her quite charming. But Cody Herb wrote in, and we'll follow up with this talk about the protagonist with the talk about the story itself. He says, "Hey guys, as a father and older brother, the story of Taro and his siblings made me teary-eyed. Did the story have an impact on you, and which story was your favorite?" It's funny because I was writing down some notes here as I'm flipping through them, actually, and I feel like maybe it's just some sort of bias about being exposed to it first, but I did find the Saya and Benny story with their brother Taro and the destruction of their village. Of course, this is fundamental to the story of the game, but I found it to be really touching compared to the rest of the game, except for one thing, which I think is, you know, Toshi is kind of, as far as I'm concerned, positioned as the antagonist. But what's really tragic about this game, I think, is that he's the victim, like the original ground zero sort of victim of this rot god that has corrupted their land and their people, their structures, their trees and fauna and flora and all of this. And though you get to break the spell at the end, you learn in breaking the spell that the person who, or the spirit that seemed to be bad, literally antagonistic, is in fact being tortured by the inability to, or his inability in real time, to save those he loved from this terrible thing that in turn corrupted him. And that could be in part why I think that maybe Kena not being more developed as a character herself, but rather experiencing the pain and experiences of those around her and being that spirit guide, that bridge, as it were. I think that's what makes some of these ulterior characters like the blacksmith character and others really shine. And I must say, too, that I found that this game had really appropriate and really impactful voice acting, not only from Kena herself, but I think some of the characters as well. Some soft spokenness. You know, I'm not a professional, but I've done VO and for things, and I've also been in a booth many, 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 many hours doing reviewed, you know, scripts and all sorts of shit. And it's hard, in my experience, to tone it down and deliver a staid performance. And I found that there were a few of those, and I enjoyed that. So I think a little bit of texture there is cool too. But overall, that story, again, because you brought up Taro, of course, that story is in and of itself sad and so mysterious at the beginning, because you're going through the woods and you run into Saya and Benny, and they're kind of asking you for help, and you don't really know what you're getting yourself into. But the culmination with Toshi, I think, is a whole nother level. And the rot, this I don't know if this struck anyone else that played Scarlet Nexus earlier this year, but the rot and the way that it corrupts the land and creatures and stuff reminded me a lot of Scarlet Nexus, particularly with the flora. I don't know if that shines through for anyone else, but it had like a similar idea of bastardizing reality in some kind of horrific way, like some horror-laden, unexpected, unusual, creepy way. And I couldn't get away from that as well. And by the way, well, let me read this next one, and then it'll allow me to get into a few other comparisons I want to make to some other games that came to mind for me. And there are three games. I think it'll be surprising the games that come to mind, I think, for me. But Demetrius Melikos, I think I'm saying that right, says, "Greetings to the crew." Well, it's just me. "I played Kena the other day, or I'm sorry, the day it was released, and finished it a few days later, plus the platinum trophy was achieved. The game was graphically superb, the world was well-realized, and the story was really touching. In my opinion, it was also a great ode to the games of the PS2 era, like Jak and Daxter. Interestingly, the only problem I had was the gameplay. Not that it wasn't good, but I really thought that they should have gone with something that fit the overall lightness of the game. The rigid rules of a Souls-like gameplay just didn't fit well with me. What do you guys think?" See, a lot of people had written in about the difficulty of this particular game, and I can't deny that there are some difficult areas, and I want to get into those more. But I think maybe we're overstating the difficulty, and there is no way that this game is a Souls game or a Souls-like game in any way. I think it's weird, Demetrius, because you're talking about how you seem to understand the era it comes from, PlayStation 2, but that's what it's invoking. I don't think it's invoking anything from software or anything like that. I certainly didn't see that. And I think that this is a matter of taste, so you're not wrong, but I disagree with you that I think the story fit perfectly with the gameplay. The gameplay was tough. The gameplay was demanding. The gameplay was fraught with danger. And so too is Kena's experience. I think that sometimes people look at a Pixar-like presentation, like this realistic but also cartoonish, slick and beautiful presentation, and they're like, well, this has to be childlike or it has to be light. And I'm like, but the game's not light. So what you're saying, I really think they should have something that fit the overall lightness of the game. I mean, what is light about a game in which people are unable to die properly and are haunted by spirits with unfinished business? And I don't see the lightness in this game. I think that we're talking about lightness only because it is cartoonish, and I think that that is a fallacy of criticism. I don't think we should go down that road. Kena is both one of the most beautiful games on PS5 so far, no doubt, one of the most stylized games on the console, no doubt, but in my experience also one of the most serious that I've played. And I don't agree that there's a dissonant vibe here. But I did want to get more into the core of the gameplay, and a lot of that does run through with difficulty. And Adam Dietzman wrote in, although many people wrote in about this, and he says, "Let's talk about the difficulty spikes in this game. Most of the minute-to-minute combat is relatively simple, yet when encountering a boss fight, the difficulty spikes and skills not used in normal combat encounters become essential. How could the devs better balance the minute-to-minute combat, the boss encounters, and the move sets and skills available to the player over the course of the entire game? This is a good question. There are some difficulty spikes, although I think that there are only like three or so areas of the game where it's truly difficult. I was reading some walkthroughs because I was looking for some help too, not with combat so much, but with puzzles, because I'm just horrible at puzzles. And this game does require some puzzle solving. And I would see like there would be a walkthrough and it would be like, oh, a big hard boss is coming up. And I've already maybe fought this boss or something and I'm reading it. And I'm like, that wasn't my experience with this. But there were a few times where I was like, damn, this game really requires you to bring everything you have to the table. And on one hand, it seemed like it was suffering from Batman Arkham Asylum syndrome, in which it just gives you things that you don't really need and will not use and are not really very interesting. And then you wonder why it's giving you that stuff, but it actually cuts it off pretty early. Like everything is needed in terms of puzzle solving, whether you're using the spirit bomb or the bow and arrow or whatever. But I even found that by widening my vision in terms of what could be used, like I must admit that I think I went through more than half the game without even realizing you could use the rot to attack enemies. Like I thought you were just using it to solve puzzles and stuff. Like that's how lost I was on the core gameplay. So that's why I was starting to trend in my mind towards wondering, well, are they just giving you too much to work with here? But then I was like, no, I actually think the game culminates in such a way and brings enemies forth and stuff such that it encourages you to do different things, not only with the light and hard attacks with your staff, which is really cool, your bow staff kind of spear weapon, which is neat, but also with the bow and arrow and the different ways that the bow and arrow can be held, and you can hold it down for a powerful attack or kind of do just a little chip damage, and you have a certain amount of arrows and they regenerate a certain amount, and there's a lot to really balance. And you throw the bombs in and they distract enemies and slow enemies down, and you can explode them to solve puzzles and do all this. It all kind of seemed like it fit. And when I overcame a really difficult barrier in the game, which was usually a boss, I was really proud of myself when I was over it. And it's funny when you compare, maybe it's just me, but like when I fight a boss, I just like get really aggressive with it and just see what happens. And that's usually the source of my frustration. But it's fun. This game, for some reason, felt very satisfying in that I was actively seeing myself wrap my mind around the mechanics of the game and what it was demanding of me, and then able to kind of bring that to the fight. And so you would think back like an hour on your first time encountering this boss, and now you're on encounter 15 or something, and you're getting frustrated, but then you get over it, and then you look at your health, and it's like, wow, I have like most of my health. And an hour ago, I was just getting destroyed. So I'm a gamer that lacks a little bit of that patience, and I think that that might have also made the game a little more difficult for me. But I also think that this game invokes old enough games where I think it will be surprising that it's difficult for some people. And you're certainly not alone. A lot of people did write in about this, but there are some other cool mechanics too that I wanted to bring in to play here. Corey Hahn wrote in about one of them. He says, "Greetings. I adored nearly everything in this game except for one thing, the parrying mechanics. The window to parry was very small, and unlike other games in this genre, there was no visual or audio cue. With a revamped parrying system, the difficulty jumps would be more manageable, as well as add some pizzazz to the rather pedestrian combat system." So there's a few things I want to touch on here, because you had said, quote unquote, a pedestrian combat system. I totally disagree. Just because a game doesn't give you 8 million things to do doesn't mean that it's pedestrian. I actually think this game's combat system is quite well thought out and elegant as fuck. Like I was really impressed, if I really put my mind to it, how you can mix up hard and or fierce and light attacks, how you can then flip backwards, go into your bow and arrow, which just slows down time, which might buy you something, get a bow off, throw a bomb, explode it in midair, shoot through the enemy with your phase kind of teleport move that you get towards the end of the game. I really dug this. But I do agree with you, Corey, the parrying, which it was done with, I think, L1, left much to be desired. It would bring up this shield around you. It wasn't really clear if you were taking damage sometimes or what was destroying the shield and what wasn't. And I found it to be frustrating. Like when I would parry successfully, it was usually an accident. Like I was kind of just button mashing or something, or blocking like as a last ditch thing, and I just have happened to have timed it properly. But I find that in my experience with action games that I often don't parry. I'm not a very defensive player, which again, I think is the source of much of my frustration, especially with more modern games. But I will say that the parrying didn't bother me so much as much as something else. And Joshua Tull wrote in a little bit about this. He says, Hello, gentlemen. While I did platinum Kena and enjoyed my time with it, I can't help but feel there was something inconsistent with the jumping and traversal mechanics. I found myself falling often or missing jump points I was being precise with. As I feel games like Uncharted and Tomb Raider have perfected these mechanics, I feel Kena was frustratingly lacking in the area. Did you have these same issues, or am I being obtuse? So no, I agree with you here. You get a double jump and it becomes second nature. Some 3D games just really suffer from, or I think many 3D games actually really suffer from this sort of unknown when you're approaching platforming, how forgiving platforming will be, like what basically hitboxes look like, or these, you know, or what your geometry looks like and how it's coded and how forgiving it will be. For instance, in Mega Man and 2D Mega Man games, like you can get Mega Man standing on literally a pixel. Right. So you get to know how forgiving or not the game is, as opposed to a game like Castlevania, where you can see 2 or 3 seconds ahead of time when you're going to die, because you're going to get this Medusa head is on a trajectory where it's going to knock you backwards, and the knockback is going to knock you into a hole. So you have to get to kind of know and master those mechanics. I feel like in some way, Kena is forgiving enough in its checkpoint system where it doesn't become a major issue. I feel like there are places in the game where I would have absolutely lost my mind if there weren't forgiving checkpoints. And the point that comes to me in this is actually the last boss, when you kind of get into these different phases where you have to go into a battle arena and then you have to go into this like platforming arena. And I made it almost to the end of the platforming arena my first time getting to it, and then I died and I was about to like scream because I thought that the game was going to kick me out and back to the beginning of the boss, which is what happens if you die in the arena the section before. But the game, the designers, and probably in QA and in playtesting, were wise enough to realize like this is going to drive people insane. And I think that that was some sort of acknowledgement, as it were, that they might have not fine-tuned the platforming enough. But it's not a Mario game or like Spyro or something. It's not even like Sly Cooper or something. It's not really necessary. You don't have to have that kind of platform magnetism and stuff, because the game's not asking you for a great deal. I think that the obtuseness of the game came much more from, in this regard, from just not really knowing where to go or what to do. I feel like this game reminded me a lot of other games where it kind of literally tells you what you need to do, but it doesn't really give you enough information to know, like, am I approaching this right? Like, what is the key component I'm missing? I really like when games get a little more granular, reminding you what it is you need to do, showing you what needs to be done, and giving the player the option to, I guess, circumvent those features if they want. But I did find that I was running around a lot. In fact, most of my consulting with the walkthrough that I was using really happened to be like, where the hell am I? Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. And though I think that this game isn't a 2018 God of War style missing all of the wrong things experience, and what I mean by that is that my major complaint about God of War 2018 is it just misses all of the small things, from map to quick travel and traversal and just readability. Like, they just really failed on that front, and I really think that that was a shame, because God of War 2018 is so fantastic to play. It's too bad that they, you know, burdened it with all this garbage, like the easiest stuff that you could do. And I feel like maybe there's some of that here as well, with readability and also with puzzle solving. And Kyle Kano wrote in and gets a little further into this. He says, I got the platinum for Kena, which tells you how much I loved it, but after spending so much time, I saw all the mechanical faults: hitboxes, parry windows, and lack of information for collectibles. Trophies should show you the hard work and gorgeous world they created, not its faults. Other than that, Kena is the kind of game that has me excited for a sequel or Ember Lab's next project. We'll talk a little bit about that, but I agree with you here. To me, there are faults that are worth noting. There is some hitbox funkiness, and that's true, although I don't know if that is due to awkward programming or weird mechanics. I mean, when you're making a 3D game and you're keeping everything facing each other, it's hard to sometimes turn everything in a logical way that makes sense, especially if you want the camera to be controlled by the game itself, which is where lock-on comes from. And by the way, the lock-on system in this game is not very good. I barely used it. It also was very unintuitive being mapped where it was. So there is some weirdness where you're like attacking an enemy and but you're kind of like next to it, and he's attacking you and he's next to you but attacking behind you. Unfortunately, that's not really unheard of in games like this. So the collectibles you had brought up, I agree with you here too. what I really like about this game from a trophy hunting perspective and from a completion perspective, like really getting to know everything in the game and understand everything in the game and et cetera and so on, is that you have this conceivable world, this map. It reminds me a little bit of this JRPG I played earlier this year, RFL, where by the end of the game, it's like, wow, I didn't go very many places, but I feel like I really got to know this place. And that's the way I really wanted to feel about this game, but I felt like it was frustrating. Like, you'd want to jump down to a section below you, but you would just arbitrarily die. It's like, why can't I jump down there? Like, you can go down there, so why can't I just jump down there? Like, the game conducts some trickery, I think, to make it run so well and look so good, as in things are not truly loaded, geometry's not truly loaded in certain areas, et cetera, until you get closer to them. Of course, there's a letterboxing effect, which I think would make it more filmic, but I was also wondering during the cutscenes if they were doing that because it would make the game run better. They have to kind of just produce fewer pixels. So I think there's some trickery there. Most of it doesn't shine through in the final product to make it negative, but I think some of it does. And I had mentioned earlier that this game invoked some other games in me. And one of the big games that it invoked in me was 2002's GameCube game Star Fox Adventure, which is not really a Star Fox game, but for some reason, I just couldn't stop thinking about it when I was playing this game, not only because Kana is attacking with a similar kind of staff weapon, but even just the setting, like the dinosaur planet style setting, it kind of fit there. Another game that it kept reminding me of, and this was because of the rot and kind of using these creatures you find and stuff, was a somewhat obscure Konami game that you guys might remember called The Little King Story. It was on Wii and PS2, I think, but I played it on Vita, actually. I didn't really like it that much, but it did remind me of that. And you know what another game it reminded me of was an random IO Interactive game called Mini Ninjas, which I think came out in 2009 or so, and I really loved that game. There's a lot of spirit in those games that I think are all coming to bear in Kena through fun. It doesn't seem like the game is informed by a whole lot aesthetically, because I'm sure it is, but not in my world, because I'm not an animator or an animation person, so I'm sure someone will look at this and say, oh, it's like this, this, and this. But in terms of games, I'm not really seeing it. I think the informing comes a lot more from the games that I feel like inspired it or share, again, no pun intended, a similar spirit. And I think some of it is germane to the conversation, and I think some of it is really just relevant to the nature of video games, like keeping characters in front of each other, right? It's a difficult thing to do. But there's no doubt, for as effusive as the praise is for this game that I have, that there are faults as well. I do not want to act in any other way. And you were saying about collectibles. I think one of the cool collectibles in the game were I really like the spirit mail side quests. Some of them are not side quests, but getting to like unlock portions of the village, kind of bringing closure to whoever lived there. It's not always this deep story, but I really dug that, because sometimes collectibles seem and often are a little bit careless. It's just like, go get this thing, go pick up this thing. And this game has some of that, but I like when games feel like they're telling you to go find and do things that make your character stronger. And in this game, that's done. You go find meditation points to increase your health bar. You find rot to help you move things and also level you up and allow you to use more rot abilities. And the rot abilities, of course, are fundamental. And I think that these things are cool. Although finding rot, I think, is a little annoying too. And this goes back to what you were saying, Kaio, about it is a little obscure what you're doing in the game sometimes, the way it communicates with you. I do find it a little annoying, but I must compliment it on the other end as well. I don't think I've ever seen a game present a map, like a collectibles map, where it shows you the collectibles you found, which I think is pretty cool. Usually you find, like, I'm playing Far Cry 6 right now, and in Far Cry games, you like find people and they tell you where things are and maps just random NPCs. And so you need to know where you need to go still. I like what this game does is it says like, well, you found something here, so you don't have to worry about it. And you can actually go through, and it's color coded with these little colored dots on the map where you can scroll through like every kind of collectible. So you at least know based on what the information it's telling you, like this section of the game has one spirit mail, one rot, whatever. And you've already found that. I felt like the backwards approach to that was actually really welcome. It's a little more mysterious and a little more fulfilling to see the map maybe fill up with what you found as opposed to what you're looking for. I thought that was a really interesting way to go. Ricky Pontes wrote in and said, Finally getting a spoiler cast for this. Holy crap, I've been waiting. The final boss, how many times did it take you to understand the flow of what was happening? I love the game so much that it was easily a top five for me this year. It wasn't too hard in the beginning, but the bosses always kept you on your feet with a certain pattern or a way to really give it to them. Anywho, thanks. Look forward to the remainder of the episode. Thank you, Ricky, for writing in. I thought the last boss fight was really neat. And I like when games, I've said this before, I like when games are daring not to have boss fight, like final boss fights at all. Of course, this is not going to be one of those games. I don't think it should be one of those games. I'm just saying that I like when developers do something a little different and throw off the cadence. But I think they were able to do that. Like Ember Lab was able to do that with Kena because the last boss fight is a different experience than the others. And it's not just like an experience in which you fight three bosses back to back to back or different forms of bosses or different health bars per se. Rather, you're experiencing it, as I said earlier, by fighting it straight up, avoiding it, using all of your weapons, your bow and arrow, which is so fun again. My God, it's so fun to use the bow and arrow in this game, the bombs and all of that. But then you're transported to these sections where you have to go through a battle arena where you have to do this platforming section. And then at the end, it is a little obtuse, but I'm a little surprised by how easy the last boss is when you really think about it, because you can kind of just avoid him and his attacks, this massive fire encompassed arena. And you just use rot when the rot signal comes up when you're close and the timer's up to get these gold like staffs out of its back and it's killed. So it's a little easy and maybe a little lackluster, but I don't like when last bosses are just fucking annoying as shit. And I think this game does a nice job of rewarding you for getting there, making you work for it, but not going overboard. And I will also say that I know a lot of people are complaining about, and I've complained about, just the difficulty level trophies and how hard it is for mastery, but the game's really hard. Like, I can imagine that this could be a game that I would beat my head against the wall trying to get through on that hard difficulty, but or that master difficulty. And it would be interesting to see how these different boss fights would play out where you just can't take as much damage, because you can kind of turtle and use the healing rot things around you and all that in the final boss fight. But I wonder if you're going to have to be a little bit more aggressive and forward if you play it on master. I didn't do so. The last thing I want to touch on, let me actually go through my notes here. Did I say everything I wanted to say? Oh, yeah, there's a few. Well, actually, yeah, Brock Smith, I want to talk about what you have to say here. He says, so can we talk about the art and asset design for a second? I cannot get over how cohesive the design language is in this game, with every nook and cranny oozing charm. The world seems like the tip of an iceberg for a huge AAA equal a few years from now, and I'm pining to jump back in with my wife and two sons. Yeah, I wrote in my notes that really a lot of praise for the lighting effects, but also the setting. Like, I feel like forests and woods are really coming into their own in games. Like, I feel like we're there now. And I think I had brought this up on the Metal Gear Solid 3 knockback episode that we recently did, but I feel like that game kind of suffered from being set in a forest, because I don't think PlayStation 2 could really do it justice. When you see like all these bland colors, browns and greens and these repetitive textures, it doesn't do you any favors. Being in a wooded place is all about lushness and texture and life and light and dark and so many other things. And I think that this game does a really nice job of showing exactly how beautiful wooded settings can be. And the way the light shines through and hits things, the god rays, and it's just, it is a really vibrant, living world. It makes all the difference in this game, because you're saying like a AAA predecessor, like in its aesthetic, this game is AAA. I mean, it's not literally AAA, but you could imagine that a game could come out of a AAA studio that would be like this, be this long, look like this, and maybe that's what makes it so impressive. The other thing I wanted to really invoke again and just talk about, maybe we didn't really talk about it this deeply yet, but I really think that Kena uses the DualSense wonderfully, and the DualSense continues to be the true game changer, pardon the pun, for this console. As much as I love the SSD and the lightning fast loading and the beauty of the games, the way they run and the resolutions and frame rates, I feel like the controller, time and time again, is this really awesome addition to gameplay. And I especially loved the feeling of the resistance of using the bow and arrow, and how you can kind of calibrate using the bow and arrow and how you really have to wait and bring it down and pull it back. And this is good stuff. And it makes me excited, as I said on the recent episode of Sacred Symbols, that the PSVR controllers are going to be, PSVR 2 controllers are going to be pretty impressive, I think. I think Sony has something here. Microsoft has not been particularly complimentary of Sony in many ways recently. And obviously, Sony is never complimentary of Microsoft. So that's not to be that's to be expected. Microsoft always seems to respect the games. And what they respect now is the controller. And they've basically been forward saying, we are going to go back and look at this. Because I think it matters. And I think when you have these third-party games, not this is not a third-party game, although it may come over, I don't know, one day. If you put these like Far Cry's or Call of Duty's or whatever together, and you look at the resolutions and all that and frame rates, they're pretty equal, I think, usually. But I think the game changer is in the controller. And I wanted to really note that this game does a really wonderful job of using it. Another thing that I wanted to bring up and kind of reiterate is that I really loved the game's narrative and the narrative intent, I think, of the game. She says at some point, I know it's hard to revisit the past. And it is. There's inherent pain and nostalgia. It's about nostalgia. Nostalgia is about painful memories. And I like that theme. It reminds me of a more literal approach to life and death that you might have seen more abstractly through a game like 2012's Journey from that game company on PS3 at the time. And how unfinished business is in life and death the most riveting story. And yes, the game's running on Unreal Engine 4. Yes, it's beautiful. Yes, it's fun to play and all that. But there would be a loose tether if it wasn't for that thematic element that I think really is really, really important. And Big Swingin' Rick writes in with the final inquiry for this. He says, I adored this game. Great first effort by Ember Lab. I love the art style, enemy design, and characters. And all the games, although the game certainly isn't faultless, it was a fantastic experience. Is this a studio Sony should build a second party relationship with? Could Kena be the next all ages mascot for PlayStation? I don't think it's going to be a mascot, but I think Sony would be very wise indeed to retain a relationship with these guys in a second party capacity. No reason to buy them. I don't want to hear any of that talk. It doesn't make any sense. Maybe they will, but I don't feel like that would make any sense. But I feel like with Media Molecule's seeming inability to do anything anymore, and with Concrete Genie having just come out not too long ago, thus taking Pixel Opus off the board for a little while, you know, came out about 2 years ago, they're a small team. Sony is going to need to fill in the gaps with some family-friendly fare and some different kinds of games. And while I love these third-person action adventure kind of games that come out of PlayStation, it is true that it's maybe becoming a little much. And nurturing a game like this isn't expensive. It doesn't cost you much in terms of, like, what does it cost you? Some state of play real estate, some marketing, a couple PlayStation blog posts, and a few million dollars, and maybe an internal producer. And the outcome is that they have a game that's pretty essential right now, because although I don't think it's flying off the shelves by any stretch of the imagination, it is filling a gap very similar to Deathloop, that without these two games, PlayStation 5 would feel a lot more vacant, especially in comparison right now to a resurgent Microsoft with a very strong Game Pass offering. And with, as of the time I'm recording this, with Forza having just come out and Halo on the horizon, this is a differentiator. It's a small differentiator, but I think a meaningful one. It's also available on PS4, though, so it remains to be seen how much of a differentiator it really is. But I agree, Rick, that this is a studio that Sony would be wise to keep in their back pocket, and I think that they will, because even though I think the game, again, isn't setting the sales world on fire, there's no doubt that the outcome is quite nice, and both filmic in its quality and playable in its interpretation of PlayStation 2 era 3D platformers. So that's my brief unplanned conversation for Kena Bridge of Spirits. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm sorry that we couldn't have a conversation. I got an email here from Eric. He was saying there was like just a disconnect here in terms of scheduling. So, you know, obviously no hard feelings. I didn't mean it like that at the top either, but we got to get these out. We got to do what we got to do. We are a machine gun rat-a-tat. So, all right. Talk to you guys later. Hope you enjoyed what I had to say about Kena. Let me know what you thought, and we'll be back for more Sacred Symbols Plus. Obviously more review discussion, spoiler cast coming up, interviews, the regular show. No missed weeks, no missed episodes. Talk to you soon. Goodbye. Sacred Symbols, a PlayStation podcast, is a product and trademark of Last Stand Media and Collins Last Stand, LLC, and is proudly recorded in the USA. The show is conceived by, is written by, and is directed by me, Colin Moriarty. My co-hosts are Chris Raygun Maldonado and Dustin Furman. The show is produced by executive producer Dustin Furman. It's edited by associate producer Ben Smith. All of Last Stand's theme music is by my best friend, Ramon Narvaez. As you know, all of Last Stand's shows, including Sacred Symbols, are fan-funded on Patreon at patreon.com/laststandmedia. The following names are at the producer level on Patreon, our highest tier, and we're grateful for your thoughtful and kind contributions to our independent endeavor. Thank you. Andrew Morgan, Stephen Nieder, Ross Marenka, Miguel A. Brewer, Morgan Ashley, Azan, Michael Vecchio, Jerome Ferreira, SL the FMA, Jorge Palomino, Daniel D'Amore, Brad Cooley, Jeremy Key, Patrick Leslie, Dave Cowell, Tom Quinn, Sorta Serious Gaming, Unofficial Controller Podcast, Colin Farley, Mark Arnold, Zia Parix, Henry Groth, Joshua Rids, Relentless Rex, Troy Miller, Meyer Katz, Jordan Mittman, J.A. Zhu, Tristan Palacios, Drew Mullen, Christian R., Jad Rita, Kurt M. Gillenberg, Patrick Skipper, Sweaty Mitt, Chris Kelly, Dustin Graff, Peyton Stone, Roberto, Josh Alan Rui, Tyler Watkins, Troilus True, Dan Root, Talisman, Christopher, Randall Holsey, Robbie Nauman, Nuke Dukem, Jim Bob 56, William Holbert, Landon Pipkin, Dr. Stump, Josh Godfrey, Kalike Souza, Vornak, Betty Ann Moriarty, Daniel Johnson, H-Trons, Ethan Davies, Jay Getter, Manuel Ochoa, Bjorn Campbell, Jeff Mercado, Gregory Slavinsky, Galja of Fortuna, Boots, Tyler Brown, Poot, Gavin Newland, Saul Balcazar, Zach Parsley, Brian White, Raul Melendez, Eric Harden, Alex Bolton, Matt Martin, Kinnams, Joseph Baker, Rodney Coleman, Chris Moore, Caswell, Antti Kinnanen, Chris, Will Hernandez, Chris Galvin, Justin Gonzalez, Mason Kadalak, Ollie Fritz, Zach Allum, George Anthony Nunez, Kyle Hagel, Christopher, Colin Love, Daryl E. Naiman, Ryan R. Kittredge, Toby Rylan, Michael S., David Bostick, Stewie 108, Patrick Montgomery, Damon W., Tom Cargill, Richter 86, Steve Hodge, Holfeldian, Ian Bravo, Barrett Boswell, Christopher DeVayo, Chris Morton, Kevin Komaki, Johnny Waffles, Roto 24, Jonathan Coach, Sean Mason, Josh Gravelick, Jordan Town, Brian Chand, Organic Produce, Shane St. Pierre, Carlos Algarit, Richard Hebert III, Miranda Grubba, Josh Yeager, Martin Beck, Gavin, Joey Andrzejczyk, Nathan R., Joe McPartland, Gary Cavallo, Christopher Moore, Jacob Bell, Joey Rawlings, Dennis Usel, Eric Finkenbeiner, Lou and Ray Loper, Jonathan Cortez, Dylan Burns, Jason Lusky, Malachi Wall, John Schultz, David Chestnut, Anton K., Brian W. Rath, Alan Tremblay, Tyler Bello, Ryan T. Mandel, Tony Zaniga, Sean Battershall, Robbie Hensley, Alex Cabrera, Lennon Brixey, James Kinslow III, Will Caldwell, Hugo's Desk, Peter Reynolds, Anthony Vasquez, Adam Kinniston, Tyler Goodwin, William O'Carroll, Jesper Jansen, Max Cannon, Phil Crone, Throw 7, Adam Nix, Josh McKinney, Michael Gates, Alex Gates, Ryan Robertson, Sean Chandler, Petro Rose, Lockmore, Gio Corsi, Joey Gondoliger, Gerald Pennington, Justin Wagaman, David Iacolucci, Paul Joyce, Edwin Castillo, Chad Lewis, Enrique Perez, Joshua Smallwood, Shane Rayum, Spencer Brand, Don Lee, John Cordero, Keith A. Lewis, Marius Garson Peterson, Ryan Greenwood, Tyler Harris, Matthew Perdue, Patrick Harper, Mad Mock Media, Jonathan Rice, and Casual Misfits Gaming.